Hello, and welcome to the Anti-Fragile Tarot podcast. This is your resident card slinger, Susanna, here with the mid-August podcast episode. So, as I have been promising you for a long time, I am finally interviewing Rory Kelly of Rory Kelly the Musician and Rory Kelly of Sassafras Tarot. She is one of my oldest friends. We're super close. I'm an embarrassingly big fan of her music. And she's also one of the people that I go to for readings when I'm too close to a situation to read myself. She's also someone I recommend to other people if they don't want to get a reading from me for any particular reason, or if I don't feel that I can comfortably accommodate their reading, whether it's because we're too close or because I just don't have the time. So in this interview, and it is a long one, I want to prepare you. You probably saw that in the length of the episode, but just in case you didn't, we talk for more than an hour. We talk about money magic and our approaches to magic and being professional tarot card readers. And it was just really nice to chat with her about it. And I think that you'll get a lot out of it. So without any further ado, here is my interview with Rory. I think you'll love it. And just in case you manage to tune out before the end of the episode, she is Rory Kelly, R-O-R-I-E-K-E-L-L-Y. You can find her on Instagram, Rory Kelly Makes Songs. She's on Spotify. She's on all the things for music. And as a tarot business, she is Sassafras Tarot. So just in case you tune out when I start doing my promotional bit, I wanted to make sure you knew where to find her. Well, thank you for being a regular listener. And if you're a new listener, thank you for being a new listener. And I hope that you enjoy this episode, and I will see you all at the beginning of September. Something I failed to mention at the end of the interview, please email me at antifragiletarot@gmail.com if you have any requests for what my next podcast should be. I may do another interview at the end of September, but I am looking for an idea for the beginning of September, so this is your opportunity. You have 2 weeks to get me something. Let me know. All right, here is Rory and I interviewing. Thank you again for being a listener, and I will see you soon. Hello, I am finally getting to interview Rory Kelly of Rory Kelly, the Musician, and Sassafras Tarot. I have talked about her relentlessly, and several of you definitely feel on a first-name basis with Rory, which she would approve of. And we're finally actually getting to sit and do this interview. So anything else to add to that intro, Rory?
No, just that I am delighted to be on a first name basis with your fabulous anti-fragile humans. Hello.
So we were talking about what we would talk about on this. And I mean, I'm sure that people would just be happy to listen to us babble because, you know, that's usually how it goes. But I know that the major topic we wanted to talk about is money magic.
Yeah. Well, that's like one of my all-time favorite topics. So that's, I'm always happy to, you know, go on a nerd quest with that.
I guess let's kind of start off with your approach to magic. Anything you want to share about your history with it or your current practice or whatever you want to share.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. It's interesting too, because I've had like a big journey in the last several years with magic. Like you, I have often been surrounded by like the people I care about. We're often non-believers and often very intense non-believers. Like I still refer to my husband as an evangelical atheist and he agrees. He's like, yes, that's a great way to put it.
I know lots of those.
Yeah, right. And actually like almost everyone I've dated seriously has been, you know, at least of that sway, whether or not they discussed it or not publicly, you know? And so for a while, I really felt like in my 20s, like I didn't feel like I could be into the witchy things I was into as a teenager. And tarot cards were something that I wasn't totally willing to compromise on. You know, tarot was always a touchstone in my life, you know? But there was a long time where I was like, And I still feel this way. You know, it can be a psychological tool. You don't have to have any belief attached to it. And it was important for me to kind of make that disclaimer every time it came up that I was a tarot reader, you know, because I really just felt like I was going to get very, very judged for being like a witchy woo-woo human.
It's interesting because I've had a very similar thing with tarot. Like, people are often more willing to accept tarot other than the other witchy stuff.
Yeah, right. And it's almost like, well, tarot, I think, also is like, there's like this cultural thing of just like, oh, it's fun to get your cards read, you know? In fact, I was listening to the Fat Feminist Witch podcast the other day, and she was like, it's fun to get your cards read in the same way it's fun to get your nails done. Like, it's fun to just have someone pay that kind of attention to you in a special way, you
I
know?
totally get people like that,
Yeah.
especially when I do like big events. People are just like, oh, this is a fun thing to do on a Sunday.
Yes, exactly. And they don't have anything attached to it. They're just like, oh, let's just see. It's exciting for them. And so people do like see tarot as being like at least like kind of exotic and entertaining in that way. And the witchy stuff though, it like for a lot of people, they either get very fearful, or I think more the people in my life and probably your life also are just like they scoff at it a little more. And I was a little bit like, you know, when I was a teenager, I think like many people who were a little bit offbeat in the 90s, like I had like a Wiccan phase. And I describe it that way with no disrespect to Wiccans who are, you know, serious and devout. A little bit for me, it was like me trying to find my spirituality. And it was too religious for me. The truth is, I'm not a religious person. And I have become, and I'm horrified by it, one of those people who's like, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. And it's weird because for so long I didn't feel comfortable like saying the word spiritual at all. And it really has been through, you know, you and me and our friend Delia have a Facebook group that we're a part of. And Delia started that group, and I just started like spur of the moment doing like full moon conversations, like me babbling at the moon about my feelings. And it has evolved into this really, really spiritual practice. And I like still am reclaiming the word spiritual. It's hard for me to say it.
Well, it will be a full moon by the time this episode is released. It will be
Nice.
a full moon on the 15th.
Nice. So the
So,
moon can
although
count on hearing my feelings.
my patrons will get this a day early, which is
Nice.
one of my new patron perks for being such a devoted listener to the podcast.
That's really cool.
That's
Awesome.
something that my friend Tommy Kelly does, the guy who does the 40 Servants.
Yeah, I love
He
Tommy Kelly, by the way, and it's because
So
of you, so
great.
thank you.
I'm so glad that I've gotten a bunch of people into the 40 Servants. Like, I've definitely had a bunch of people be like, I'm buying this deck because I saw it on your page. And you don't have to buy the deck to interact with the servants. You can totally do it for $0.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have the physical cards.
And his kind of internet persona, like his podcast, and I guess he also has a YouTube channel that is kind of the same as his podcast and a little extra. It's very down to earth and very casual, and I really appreciate that. He really is like speaking as someone who's not trying to be like I'm an expert. He's more like I'm a peer. I'm going on this journey. I'm exploring all of these things. Come explore alongside me. And I think that's very, very it just works for me. You know, it feels really good to be talked with instead of talked down to, you know.
That's one of the better parts of chaos magic. So I've talked before on this podcast and possibly to you in person about this group that I joined a while ago called Chaos Magic Group on Facebook, CMG. And most people who've spent some time in CMG have a very love-hate relationship with it because it's kind of the Wild West of magic. And for a long time, I didn't feel comfortable claiming the chaos magic moniker because my experiences with chaos magic had really been more about ceremonial magic, a la Aleister Crowley and Thelema. And I didn't realize the underlying philosophy of chaos magic. And I mean, to be fair, I don't think a lot of coyotes also grasp the idea of chaos magic because there is, just like in the neo-pagan or Wiccan communities, there is a lot of cultural appropriation instead of looking at the underlying mechanisms of magic in different systems. We read The Elements of Spellcraft or Spellcrafting, I always forget, by Jason Miller, in the group. And I love Jason Miller's approach
Yeah, I
to
do as well.
I haven't read his Money Magic book yet. I think you did.
I'm kind of slowly in the middle of it. I'm consuming it slowly because I'm trying to consume it in a meaningful way. You know, there's always a lot of like tidbits in Jason Miller's books that really are very practical. So it's like I need to give myself the time to work through those practical things, whereas I could just breeze through it in a day and kind of like never implement them, you know? So I'm a slow poke.
But yeah, so like Jason Miller and Tommy Kelly, I think are people who approach chaos magic in the best possible way. I've met some of the worst people I've ever met through Chaos Magic Group, but I've met some of the best. And Tommy Kelly, my friend Marie, who runs Witch Him, which I have posted a few times, Jason Miller, a couple other people, they're really phenomenal and doing a lot of really good stuff for the community in different ways. And it's also nice to see people again who are doing this in a professional capacity. I never thought that I would be a professional tarot reader. Like you know, I did my teenage thing, although my teenage rebellion was stopping doing the witchy stuff because my mom was so witchy, and I was like, I remember the last big spell I did was something for my friends to protect my friends and my loved ones. And shortly after that, I'm like, no, this is nonsense. I'm not going to do this. But I didn't abandon tarot because, you know, tarot was still very meaningful. So, it wasn't, I didn't approach it in the way that I do now. I was still basically a majors only reader, but you know, it was still a thing. But my mom had done some professional tarot reading as well. I don't know if I told you that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She did professional tarot reading and some professional astrology. Her main gig was a private practice therapist as a licensed clinical social worker. And then she lost her license, and that's when we, you know, fell on hard times and became homeless. And then she did a bunch of random jobs throughout that. She wrote for the Black Star News for a while in New York, which was a really interesting experience. She and I did a mother-daughter book review thing for a while, specifically reading urban fiction,
Oh,
which
cool.
that was interesting. Sorry about the sirens in the background. As always, I'm recording in my apartment. But we so she, you know, she did a lot of freelance writing. She helped people edit things, and another thing that she did was her tarot readings on the side for people. And she definitely wasn't as professional as either you or I are about it. But social media also wasn't really a thing. I do think it's interesting some of the ways that I have followed in my mother's professional footsteps. But I don't, does your mom read? I know you've had some witchy family. Does your mom read tarot?
No, my mom doesn't. It's funny, actually. I was with her a little while ago and I was talking to her about it. Like sometimes when I visit my mom and my sister, I'll bring over a deck of cards and I'll be like, "Hey, it's time for readings, you know?" And my mom said to me, she never really learned tarot, but she said that her mom used to tell her she had a knack for shuffling. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, it's interesting what
Totally a thing.
people's takeaway is. Yeah, it is a thing. And it's like, it's interesting how I think there are a lot of, muggles, kind of like people who don't consider themselves like magical or witchy people. And you'll find out that they do have like one or two little things that are kind of witchy. And they're like, but I can claim this much, you know? It's really, and it's interesting, and that's how I felt about my mom saying, like, oh, I have a knack for shuffling. Like, she allows herself that.
I think that's been part of my problem with spirituality as well. You know, I'm very much a psychological, logical, evidence-based person, and sometimes that's at odds with some of my more spiritual leanings. But you know, I'm a very complicated person. And it's always been a thing where there's certain parts of more mainstream spiritual practice that don't ring true for me and never have. But that doesn't mean that I can't engage in spirituality in my own way. And that's something that I think a lot of people who've listened to this podcast have also kind of taken away from it. I had a recent listener telling me that they really appreciated kind of an intro to chaos magic and realizing that you can take from different things as long as you're doing it respectfully and with due consideration, and kind of make it your own and work with what works for you. I think my friend Marie, who does Witch Him, her big thing is actually, no, it wasn't Maria. I'm sorry. I lied. This is Alice Hart. Alice Hart, her big thing is that her first magical tool was a Sharpie.
Oh, cool.
You know, doing a lot of sigil work.
Yeah.
And that's always cool. So, let's talk more about money magic. I want to hear how I know money magic's a big thing that you do both with your music business and your tarot business. So, tell me more about that.
Yeah. It's funny too. I don't necessarily consider them to be connected. Obviously, like they are connected because those are the ways I make money, you know, but
You have very different brands for them.
I have somewhat different brands. They're like I'll share things that are not my like I'll just be scrolling through and share something on both pages, and I'll generally know this is for the tarot business, this is for the music business. There's some overlap because I think you and I are both really about just like empowering people to like work through the challenging stuff and face it and like be their own you know like badass as needed, you know? And so that's like the where the overlap is. But for me, money magic has been like in part a way of for me to get around my baggage with money and my baggage with feeling like I have a right to make money, and particularly feeling like it's valid for me to make money doing things that I feel are my true gifts and that I love to do. And it's really interesting how people in both the witchy community and the creative arts community have this sort of like it's I almost feel like it's a virgin whore complex around money. It's like it's not I swear though,
Know
let me
exactly what you
you
mean.
do, right? You feel it. And like for
To be
those who are
fair,
not like right there with us, like it's like if you're not making money, then you're like a frivolous fool, you know, and it's a silly hobby that you're wasting your time on. And if you are making money, then you're like a sellout. And you're, you know, like, and you're not really in it for the love of the art, and somehow it makes you less like valid and sacred as either an artist or a witchy person, you know?
I don't know. I know that's a real thing, especially in the music business. I've seen you've talked a lot about playing for exposure and how you stopped working for those, venues that make you bring people in and all that stuff. And it's been amazing to watch your journey. Like whenever I have people who are getting more serious about music, I definitely talk about you as someone who's really been putting in that work. But it took you like a decade to do it.
Yeah, it
More than a
did.
decade, but
Yeah.
definitely the decade that I know. Like when I first met you, you were starting to really think about it being a thing.
Yeah, it's funny. Like my whole life I've desired it to be a thing, and my approach to it up until like really like the last several years before I left my last day job, it was a little scattershot because no one teaches us what to do, you know, because we have this virgin whore complex around it. It's like even if you're surrounded by people who encourage you to, for example, go to school for music, the expectation is so then you can make money teaching because, like, we all know it's not a real option to be a performer or be a composer, which frankly isn't true. You know, there are a lot of people who are not just like, and I'm not talking about just like the very highly paid, very front page of the news performers, but there are a lot of people who are just making a living doing those things because they work the business. And for me, I didn't that's not visible in the music business or for that matter in the witchy business, in the same way it is like to, you know, climb the corporate ladder. You know, there's like a set of steps you can follow, kind of. And so for I was very scattershot, and I honestly feel like what took me the most time was not me figuring out how to do it. It was me unlearning the belief that it couldn't be done. It was like I had blinders on. And I really, that's been part of my own spiritual journey. Like I've learned that belief is very important because it has these big, big repercussions on my life. And it's not even about like, do I believe this is true and therefore I should follow it? It's just about me looking at my beliefs and going like, okay, this belief meant that I worked in a job I hated for a lot of years and didn't feel I could possibly make similar money doing something I loved. And this belief allows me to do the thing I love and ditch the job I hate and truly value myself. And it has nothing to do with which one is true. It's just the one that I choose to subscribe to for the ability to have a life that doesn't suck, you know?
When my friend Caden did my astrology chart, unfortunately, he's taking a break from doing astrology readings. So if anyone listening has any recommendations for astrologers that you like, definitely put me in touch, especially people who are kind of building up their business. When he did my chart, he was saying how one of the big things that he saw in it was that I would have two big careers, like simultaneously.
Mm.
So for me, that's been nursing and tarot. I've been lucky. I was sort of alluding to it before with tarot, except for when I very first started, I've generally had people who really do want to pay me. I've done, I do giveaway readings whenever I can, probably too much, but a lot of the time, if I have a friend come to an event and they want to get a reading, I'm like, I'm not charging you. They put what I would have charged them in my tip jar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been lucky that I haven't really encountered the, you know, oh, you should be doing this for free because you have a gift. I've encountered the, this is an energy exchange and the energy I'm exchanging with you is money.
Yeah.
Although I've been really happy to barter. I know that you've talked about bartering at farmers markets that you've played at.
Yeah.
But the last event that I just did last week in the cemetery, two of my favorite vendors, they charged me less for something than they otherwise would have, and I'll be doing readings for them.
Right.
So like something that was $40, one of the vendors charged me $25 for with a reading on the side, which is like perfect for me.
Yeah, and that's also an energy exchange, right? Like we tend to have this also, we have this feeling that like unless a monetary value is assigned to something, it's valueless. And that really moves us away from making those kind of wise, you know, like wise bargains that allow both people to win, that where it just wouldn't be possible if it was only dollars that we were talking about.
Out of curiosity, since you started, how long has the Sassafras Tarot been a thing?
Oh, gosh, I'm not sure. I want to say 2 years and change.
That sounds right.
Yeah, that sounds right. I haven't like, it's funny. I'm such an obsessive tracker of my numbers with music, because, you know, because it's my chosen path and all of that. And that's how I've been able to grow it, is by tracking and tracking and tracking, and then looking at what made me the most money and looking at what hurt me and making new choices. And with tarot, a little bit, I've deliberately been like a bad Virgo about it. Been like, no, I'm not gonna, this is just something that I do because I really enjoy it and I don't care about making money from this because I already have my calling. And so like, I have no idea how long I've been in business. I have no idea how much I made my first year, you know, like I'm not even paying attention.
That makes me feel a little better because I'm really bad at tracking how much I have in my bag for change. I always have like some fives and singles for change because people, I normally charge at events now $10 for a 5-minute reading.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always have change because people pay with a 20 and then I give them change and blah, blah, blah. I'm really bad at remembering how much I have in there. I'm trying to keep $50 in there, but you know, I don't have cash on me a lot of the time because we live in a society. So like sometimes I need to dip into my change thing to get more change and I just forget.
Yeah.
So I'm really bad at keeping track of exactly how much money I made or even how many people I had. Which again, like you, it's that's a thing that I'm not, well, I guess I'm not normally very good at keeping track of what people owe me or whatever, but you know, you'd think I'd be better about it because I like data.
Yeah.
But here we are.
It's funny too, in a broad sense, I track my money too. Like I track, I do what Julia Cameron refers to as counting, which is I just keep a log of like what goes in, what goes out every day. And whenever I spend something or receive something, I mark it down. So technically, I guess those numbers are there if I want to search for them, you know, but that's also helped me. That's helped me understand my financial psychology and all of that, you know. But yeah, and I have the opposite problem because I'm a musician and I frequently get tips. And so I walk around with like, you know, 38 singles in my wallet on any given moment, just because that's like part of my livelihood. And it's like very awkward paying for my gas with 38 singles, you know, but I do it. And so, yeah, I also don't always have track of how much is in my wallet. And it's because it's all singles and I have a lot of cash at any given moment. Like I'm a more cashed person than the average in today's culture.
Yeah, I want to say, I think like for me, for you, the tarot thing is really kind of a side business.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, for both of us, we have different passions. And I think also, I don't know if you feel the same way. I feel that there is a lot demanded of me in terms of emotional labor when I'm reading for people. And I actually think that's very special. And in a way, I treasure that. I treasure it in the same way that, like, I used to volunteer as a hotline counselor. And I treasured those experiences, even though they were very draining. But for that reason, I don't feel like I could do it full time, because that's a lot of emotional labor, you know, and I have enough just sorting through my own stuff.
I feel like if I didn't already have nursing, mm-hmm. I would consider trying to make Antifragile Tarot a bigger thing.
Yeah, you have actually two jobs that really are about providing service and providing emotional and, like, caretaking labor to others.
Yeah, and I like it that way. But
yeah, that's like who you are. You are a healer, you know. And it manifests itself. It is, Mama. I apologize. You're going to hear sirens from Susanna and meows from my cat.
Yeah, we totally did not remember to say that in the intro. Yes, Rory has this fantastic cat named Lil Mama, and she's very into the mic.
She's obnoxious. I'm paying attention to the mic and not to her, so you will probably hear her complaining in meow form, and you might even hear her, like, headbutting the mic and purring, because she's a rude, spoiled brat.
So can you share a little bit more about some of the specific things that you like to do with money magic? Because everyone always wants specifics. And if you don't feel comfortable sharing some of that practice, that's okay.
No, I think let's talk practical. I feel this way about magic, and I feel this way, as you know, about, like, making money as an independent person. We need to talk more about money. We need to be more open about it, and we need to be more specific about it. Because otherwise, it leads to people just going, like, I don't know, what do I charge? And, like, either super lowballing or just cheating themselves because they don't know how to negotiate effectively for themselves. So let's talk about money magic. For starters, I'm very careful to be specific. I'm very careful to be specific and time bound in my money magic, which means if I ask for something, it's going to be like this amount of money by this date, generally speaking. I find that that's simplest. I have at other times been like, well, I want to have all of my bills paid on time or early in this span of time. And I don't think that's a less reasonable goal. And for some people, I think it's more comfortable to say that because it's not like you're asking for extra. And that doesn't hurt our psychological, like, money shame as much. But I do feel like it's a little harder to explain to the universe. So for me, it's just like, I want this amount of money by this time, you know, and that's that. Please go after it for me, you know, money spirit or spirit or whoever you're speaking to, you know, kind of in your spell work, higher self, whatever. And I track it. And it's really important, I think, to track it. And like I said, I already track my money. So that's not something that is super hard for me. But often if I'm like, okay, I want X number of dollars in September, I will open a separate document and be like, here's everything I received in September and how I received it. And I don't, by the way, necessarily consider a spell a failure if I fall short of that money, but other extraordinary stuff happens. You know, if it's like, okay, maybe it was not possible. I did not have enough windows of opportunity for money to come to me to make X number of dollars this month. But if some random stuff happens, and I have money, like, literally drop in my lap, I'm like, well, thank you. Thank you, spirits, universal powers, elements, whoever did this for me, thank you.
Right. And if you're setting those specific parameters, like, I'm sure we've all had that experience of asking for more money and then getting more work than you can feasibly do.
Oh my gosh, yes. That's actually a thing. In our Facebook group that I mentioned earlier, we all kind of talked about doing some money magic for this moon cycle, and a bunch of us did and worked with a sigil. And for me, I, like, deviated from what the group did, and I specifically created a sigil around not an amount of money coming for me, but money coming to me easily and quickly. Because in recent months, I've done a fair amount of money magic, and it has resulted in me doing a ton of work. And, like, to the tune of, like, I'm a gig-based person, right? I'm a musician, so I can make anywhere from, like, $75 to $500 for the same amount of work, depending on the day of the week, the place, who's paying me, the situation. And I would much rather do, $300-$500 gigs in a week, for example, which is a hugely high, beautiful number that I've never aspired to 3 times in a week, rather than like, $10, $75 gigs. And I don't even know if those numbers add up, but you know what I'm saying. And so what's happened for me in the over these last few months is I've been doing money magic, like, okay, I need to work, I need income, I'm willing to work for it, universe, I'm not asking for a free ride. And I have in turn gotten a lot of kind of like my labor being cheapened. So yes, I'm making that money, but I'm working so much that it's harmful to me.
Yeah, that's definitely something I've struggled with. One thing I find useful, so I know a lot of us DIY stuff, like, but I'm not always the most DIY person because I just have too much going on at all times. So one thing I really love, finding a fellow creator who does stuff that you like. I love House Freya, HOUSSFREYA. She's based in New Jersey. And she does these amazing candles. They smell great. They have crystals in them, so when they burn down, you keep the crystals. They burn really nicely, and I have found them so freaking useful. Her money candles have been great. They have bay leaves in them, which I really appreciate.
Nice.
Yeah, I also do a lot of kitchen witchcraft. So bay leaves go in every freaking soup that I make.
Nice.
I've been also thinking about burning bay leaves instead of sage. I mean, so the sage thing, right? That's kind of been talked to death on all
Yes.
the sides. I think I probably touched on it here. I mean, the sage thing is complicated because obviously I don't call smoke cleansing smudging because I'm not doing a smudging ceremony, but what about people who've been invited to do them who are not indigenous, and what about people who use sage in their other, like, I have several Filipina friends who use sage, or native friends who come and buy stuff. When I had my shop, we had sage from a local vendor. Plus, most of the sage that's harvested is actually harvested by indigenous people. So it's very, I mean, there's really no ethical consumption under late capitalism, and we're all doing the best we can. But to that end, burning bay leaves is a really nice way to kind of incorporate kitchen witchcraft and maybe get away from sage as a thing.
Yeah, and there are like so many like helpful plants that both magically and often medicinally, and I always urge people to like really, really do their research before trying to use an herb like in a medicinal way, but even in terms of cooking, right? Like let food be your medicine. And I think there's a lot of overlap there too, energetically speaking, that like we don't have to be constantly throwing a sage party. We can, there are so many plants that we can even like drill down and get a lot more specific about, well, what is my purpose in this? Like, what am I cleansing or what am I bringing in? And get super specific and make a cool, nerdy, like plant-based incense without having to be like, well, sage is what we do now.
Right. Yeah, there's so many more things you can do. I really like customizing your magic for what you need. It's part of why I like sigils so much. And part of why, generally speaking, this is a very broad statement I'm about to make. I am personally more resistant to finding sigils online or sigils that other people made. Delia sigils were freaking fantastic.
Yeah, they're
Luisa sigils
gorgeous.
are great. And if you're doing a sigil as a group effort, that's also a very different thing. But for very specific magic, and again for a very specific kind of money magic. For instance, if you were trying to draw more money from your tarot business as opposed to your music business, I think that creating your own sigils is really helpful. And again, using whatever individual things you have at your disposal. So for me, I do a lot of thread magic. I haven't done a lot of sewing lately, but when I get my actual nurse scrubs, because I'm still waiting to hear about my very first nursey job. I'm probably going to sew some sigils into like the corner hem or something.
Yeah, and that's also really special because it means something specific to you that it wouldn't mean anything, like wouldn't mean to another human. And I think that's important with magic. Like I'm not the kind of person who's ever like I will look up like tables and correspondences and stuff like that. Like Wikipedia is my friend.
So,
But
yeah, I was about to ask, how do you? I've seen you recommend Wikipedia. My problem with the tables and correspondences is I don't know who to trust. The
yeah.
magic internet, even more than the regular internet, is totally the Wild West.
Oh, it is. And a little bit it always was like, I forget who said it, but like, you know, if you go to like a Scott Cunningham book, for example, and like look at those tables of correspondence, it's not like, and actually even like Scott Cunningham was the kind of person who put all of these little asides and stuff in his books, but it's not like you're gonna be like, you use this for this and here's why. It's just like, use this for money, use this for health, use this for whatever, and you don't have like a real understanding of who arrived at this and why. And so it is kind of, it's also like, okay, I can go look at any table of correspondence, and this might be in here due to some particular religious practice that believes in it, that in fact doesn't necessarily jive with my beliefs. It might be in here because it's connected to some deity that I've literally not researched and not heard of. And, you know, that's not, that's kind of like prefabricated, half-assed magic to me. You know, to me, I'd rather look at those tables of correspondence and maybe like get some inspiration. But what I may choose to use is something that's personal to me. You know, I'm not going to go to my witchy shop and buy an herb I've never heard of. I'm going to maybe choose to use an herb that I cook with regularly that's in my kitchen cabinet that I'm delighted to know has this other, you know, correspondence because that's more accessible to me. And also, like your own correspondences. Like, there are things I associate with prosperity that aren't necessarily in those tables, but it's meaningful to me personally.
Right. Incorporating, you know, whatever you grew up with or personal family beliefs or whatever. For instance, in Discordianism, which is my other main line of spiritual connection besides Judaism and chaos magic, well, Discordianism is an offshoot of chaos magic. It's complicated. You know, you have the law of fives, right? So everything is directly or indirectly related to the number five. But the number 19 is a very, very important number for me. I have a number 19 tattoo. Well, and in Discordianism, well, 19 is related to the number five because it's one away from 20. But like, you know, taking your own personal, as you said, correspondences and own personal experiences with what works and, you know, kind of forget the correspondence tables again, unless you're working within a very specific system, right? Like, so for people who are initiated into IFA or other initiatory practices, you should probably follow what you're working with. But for the rest of us who are not necessarily following a strict initiatory practice, working with what not only what works for you, but also what you've got. I feel like a lot of witchcraft and a lot of magic is really about working with what you've got and making something from that.
Yeah, I really agree. And I think I'm someone also who's on the go a lot, and I think frequently about what magic on the go means to me because often there's nothing at hand. You know, it's not like I'm like, yeah, let me just carry around my incense and carry around, you know, like, you know, some random multicolored candles and stuff like that. And sometimes I really do think about, like, well, if I'm going on tour, maybe I should bring those things. But it's not practical on the go. And so often all you really have is, you know, your will and your idea. And so for me, things like chanting are very attractive because that's something you can do anytime, any place, aloud or silently. And if that's something that you can sink into, especially for me as a musician, like it's very rhythmic for me, that can put both your mind in a helpful state, you know, and I think be as effective as, say, like, okay, I'm going to call the corners and do a full candle ritual and all of that, you know.
I know you've been doing a lot of looping in your music lately, which sounds fantastic, by the way. I love your live looping videos.
Oh, thank
Definitely,
you.
we'll do a whole, you know, where to find you online and stuff at the end. But the Let You Down video is really, really good.
Thank you.
You know, do you ever kind of set an intention when you're doing that looping?
You know, I don't, but I'm really glad you brought it up. Well, first of all, because now I feel like I might. but I do set intentions while I'm performing. I will sometimes be like, hey, universe, I need my tip jar filled today, and maybe I'll put a peppermint leaf in it, or like I've actually got a couple of coins that I just keep in there permanently that are foreign coins that I've received because I play in New York City and a lot of international people stop through. So I'll do those little luck things, but I'll try to put more magic into my performance. You know, I'll kind of announce to myself silently, like, this, my intention for this is to, you know, encourage people to put that money in my tip jar and like reach ears of people who are able to be generous. But another thing I've been doing, especially with looping is like a circle, and like circles are very magical to me. And so for people who aren't familiar with what that means in a musical context, I have something called a loop pedal, and there are like various different ways you can do this, but basically it allows me to record myself for a set amount of time that I choose, and then build on that recording, so I can like lay down some chords and then start the loop and repeat those chords and build some vocals on it and perhaps build some beatboxing on it. So it creates this full sound, but it's all repetition, which is a different way of looking at music. And in a way, repetition is kind of the building blocks of a lot of magical ritual. And I actually, when I want protection, I kind of have developed a little protection chant that I envision as a looped chant. And it's not even about, so I'll kind of like set something and I'll set myself saying like just the word protection in a certain way in my brain or singing it in a certain way. And I'll imagine it having been looped and laid down and then sing something else over it and kind of in that way, like build this protective kind of web around myself. And it's all like, it's energetic and it's kind of like, it wouldn't have occurred to me if I was not a looping person as a musician. So it's interesting how those two things interplay. Anyway, I don't know if that's very relevant to anyone's practice except for mine.
You would be surprised.
Yeah.
Thinking what we said about the foreign coins, I always try to have $5 in my tip jar when I start.
Yeah.
For anyone else who is doing professional tarot reading who has a tip jar, I know this sounds like a fake trick and, a sellout kind of thing, but people are more likely to put money into your tip jar if they see other tips.
Yes, it's true.
You
And
will
make
have
it a big
nice
bill.
people.
Encourage people not to give you just a single.
Well, I always have. Well, so I have a $2 bill in there because
Oh, that's nice.
my husband has a really, frankly, astounding collection of $2 bills.
Oh, cool.
Sorry, I am trying to get him to bring me a luck candle right now because I have a friend who has an interview tomorrow, so I'm trying to light a candle for her. A House Freya luck candle, actually.
Nice.
So I always have $5 again because of the Chaos Magic Law of Fives thing. So another thing I know you're doing right now, you're doing psychic hotlines.
Yes, this is something I started doing this summer. I intended to start it in the winter because if you're a musician in any way, you know that the winter tends to be a slower time, except apparently in areas where ski lodges are a thing, then it's a busy time.
Are you going to travel?
I may, yeah. But
Oh, one of your now fellow patrons, because Rory has a Patreon and she's now a patron of mine and I'm a patron of hers. We're canceling each other out, but
delightfully, though.
yes, perfectly. My friend Elizabeth, who does Divination Station, she's based in Buffalo.
Oh, nice.
So.
And that's a cool thing too. Like now, when I tour, I make a point of like visiting either witchy friends in the area or just like finding the local like witchy haps, and going and like going to the stores or seeing if there's like a little event or something going on. And that's been like a really fun thing during my touring. But yeah, so I'm working on psychic hotlines. I'm working on a psychic hotline, and I kind of just was like, well, I would love to just be able to sign on and, like be able to do a reading when I have some free time. And that was kind of what got me started researching it. And it's interesting. I found a place that's really good. I had to do some research before I found a place I was comfortable with ethically. And the place that I'm now working for, I really appreciate the way they approach things. They straight up tell their readers, like, we don't want you saying things like you're going to help someone remove a hex. We don't want you giving readings on medical things. They're very concerned with being sure, that that all of the readers are behaving in a way that is ethical. And it's a totally different experience from reading either at a festival, in that like fast-paced setting, where you might do at an event, or doing like an online like PDF style reading, like I know both you and I do, Susanna. It's like in those settings, I find even at event, I'm the one trying to cut a reading short because I'm trying to get as many people in and make sure that everyone gets their turn, and everyone gets a valuable experience. So I'm speaking very quickly and I'm trying to give people their value, but also move things along. And I find the opposite is true in the hotlines. People are moving things along very quickly because they're paying by the minute. So it really is like, tell me about this. This is what I have a question on. I do not use spreads. I just lay down cards and, to try to address questions as I've been asked. And I've also been finding that sometimes the fewer cards I lay down, the better, because often a person needs to talk about something, and it's getting that situation in depth is the part of the call that's really important, because that allows me to give the right context to them, to a stranger I've never talked to before, who I only get 3 minutes with, you know?
I've been calling reading without a spread, which is normally what I do at events. I've been calling it cooking without a recipe.
Nice.
I came up with that all on my own for once in my life. How many cards do you find that you average when you do that?
It varies a lot. And especially too, because people's questions vary a lot. Often there's definitely like recurrent topics, as you find with event readings or anything else. People are off, and it's about romance. It's about weird, awkward romance where no one wants to make the next move, and it's complicated, you know?
You see, I don't have that experience. Most people want to know about career with me.
I find more people at events want to know about money with me, or maybe that's what they're willing to say face to face to me. And I find on the hotline it's so relationship-y. And it's
I
funny
can
too,
believe that.
because yeah.
It's just because you're not face to face and maybe they feel more emboldened.
And I think it's a little more of an impulsive thing. You know, if you're at an event with someone and you see someone reading, you might think to yourself, at least I certainly do, like, if I'm gonna get a reading, what will I ask about? I want this reading to be valuable to me. And well, for me, I'm a Virgo, and I'm also, like, very single-mindedly building my career. So for me, it often will be about, things like money and career. But that's also something tangible I think people are comfortable asking about, as you said. And I think, you can call a hotline and get like that kind of instant conversation with someone when you're in an emotional moment. And so perhaps you're more likely to be calling about like your love life that is causing you pain, you know?
That's totally fair. I mean, I get my fair share of love life readings. I had to do a very difficult one. I shared the spread with you earlier today.
Yes.
But I personally get just so much career, even on Etsy. Like people who ask me, like, "Hey, I don't know what to do with my career. I don't know what direction to take this in," et cetera, et cetera. So is this the only psychic hotline that you've done?
There's this one psychic hotline that I've kind of been working for not too long, like a few months now. They're the ones that I really know and feel really comfortable with. But while I was seeking this out, I did a lot of research, like I said, and this started in the winter, and I was like looking at different places, and I went to a fairly big name place, and I'm not going to name anything by name, by the way, just because I don't want to misspeak. I don't want to turn anyone to or away, from a certain business, but I applied to a fairly big name one because other people in our tarot groups that both of us are on had, had talked about it, and I was like, well, this is probably worth exploring. It was like kind of the obvious option. And I didn't hear anything from them for a long time. Like, I just got flat out no response to my application. I did follow up and do all those things that you do, and then suddenly, 2 weeks ago, I got a series of emails from them being like, congratulations, you're our newest advisor, and basically onboarding me. And I literally hadn't heard from them in 6 months. And so it was just, it was an odd situation, and it was odd that in this particular case, the smaller name had a very, very nurturing onboarding process. It was obviously really important to them, both that they got people who were, that they had vetted and that really were going to give quality readings and be ethical, and that the larger name was really more like it felt like a soulless franchise experience, you know?
Yeah,
So,
no, I totally get that. I've
yeah.
been considering it, but I'm so uncomfortable with me personally, and this is a very personal thing. Like I'm not knocking anyone else's hustle, being associated with the word psychic, that I'm concerned about it. But since you and I have very similar approaches to tarot reading, I do feel that you're slightly, ever so slightly more woo than I am.
I think so too. I just
Only a
talked about
little.
how I'm like reclaiming the word spiritual, you know. I am kind of on more on that side of things.
Right, and I again, I appreciate that. Like, There's a Taking Back Sunday lyric that I always think about. The faith you found, I've never felt. So, it's something like I've always wanted that kind of faith. I just don't have it. But I'm Jewish. We struggle with faith. It's kind of the whole thing. So like I've struggled with that idea, but I think it might be a nice thing to do. I mean, so did you do a lot of readings last year, like in the months leading up to October? Like, did you do a lot of tarot events?
I definitely got opportunities to do a lot of tarot events, and I had to turn down the majority because that's still a very busy time as a musician. But for sure, there's an uptick, you know. People, in general, when people are doing like fall events, they're like, oh, we'll get a tarot reader, and certainly like Halloween parties. So the whole, you know, like set of weekends surrounding Halloween, I had more opportunities than I could take as a tarot reader. So yeah, that was a thing. Did you have that experience too?
Oh, I always do. I try to do as much as I can, especially local. Unfortunately, because I don't drive, I have to factor in transportation time and cost if I'm doing something far away. So if someone can pay me, I will do it. Like I'll essentially work for cost. Like there is a library I really wanted to do a reading for, a reading event for, but it was just far away enough that I couldn't justify it below a certain amount. And they couldn't afford that amount, and I felt crappy about it. But it's just like I can't justify losing a lot of money on this.
And I don't think you should have to.
No, I mean I felt really bad about it, and I do wish I knew more readers in Jersey that I felt good about doing this with. But like I always recommend you, but you're in Long Island and you have the music thing, and it's a whole thing. But my October is already starting to fill.
I believe it.
And I'm doing back-to-back readings in Jersey City in September. So I have my friend David, who is Murdoch for Murdoch Music. His latest album is Rebirth, and it's really freaking good. He has this organization called Arts on the Hudson, and he was asking me to do a to help with an event they're doing there, and I'm doing a half marathon that morning, but I'm going to come after.
Oh
So
my
I might.
God, of course you are.
I've worked both my medical center job and tarot events after my half marathons.
Color me unsurprised. That's a very Susanna thing to do.
Well, the one event that I did was okay. It was a slightly slower event, and it was far enough away that I had time to go home and shower and do my thing. This one, I'm going to be coming to the event late unless I'm a lot faster than I anticipate, which is technically possible. But honestly, I'd rather work a tarot event after than work at medical center.
I could see that.
But I've done it. I've done it several times. So, it's totally doable. But I'm also doing an event the day before. There's a block party in my neighborhood, and they approached me about doing readings there. So I'll be doing that. I already at the cemetery event that I did earlier this week on Sunday, I got approached about doing a private party, and I happened to be off that weekend, so probably doing that. I, funny enough, as I find that at the big festivals, you get more people, like we said earlier, who are really into doing, oh, I'm going to do this because it's a fun thing to do because I'm out and it's a weekend, or I'm drunk and I'm going to do it. But at private party events, I've had people get super real.
Oh, me too.
I get that at the regular events too. Like the last event I did on Sunday, I had a couple of super real readings. But like at the private party events, I mean the very first one I ever did, someone like bawled crying.
I've definitely had those, and it is more likely to happen, it seems, at like a private party than at an event. Sorry, go on.
No, I didn't have a whole lot more to add. I was curious if that was your experience too, because I know you've done both the big events and the small events.
Yeah, I think it depends too. Another thing I'm doing is, I guess I should plug this. I do, if you're local on Long Island, I do tarot brunches at the Long Beach Hotel the last Sunday of the month. And that's like, you know, brunch hours, you know, like usually starts around 10, goes to around 1.
And that's something that, depending on the day, sometimes there are a lot of people there. And sometimes really it's just people who saw me discussing my tarot brunches and just decided to come and get their cards read, often as a group, you know, like a group will come. And that almost is like a private party vibe, because it's a group of people who all know each other. They're comfortable. They've all decided to do this together. And it's not the very loud, bustling, like festival or event atmosphere, you know? So I have had those very emotional readings in that context too.
So what is your setup? So like, I'll share mine first to give you an idea of what I'm asking you about. So I don't do a lot of outdoor events. I do more indoor events, although I do some outdoor.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do events, I always need to have a table and at least three chairs, one for me and two for my table. I always have two, because sometimes I do couple readings. And even if I'm not doing a reading for a couple, or sometimes couple is friends, by the way, I've totally done friend couple readings.
Nice.
But I like to have those there, because sometimes people like to have their sister or their friend or whoever sit there and kind of help them validate. And I've definitely noticed, like, when I have that other person sitting there, like, if someone's getting something that's really calling them out, their friend is going to be like, yeah, you need to listen to that. And it's really fun. But I also always tell people, like, hey, do you need me to tell everyone around you to buzz off?
Yeah, it's really, yeah, I do the same thing.
Do you have, like, the two chairs as well?
You know, I'm really glad you said that, because now that I think about it, that's really important. I've often ended up at places with two chairs, because I don't know if this is your experience, but frequently I have a table and a couple of chairs that I can bring with me. But frequently when I work an event, especially if it's a party of any kind, places either have that set up, or they, an event, like, they often like to set it up. They like to decorate it. Like, people, I think, enjoy, like, decorating the tarot table, you know? So
I've
often
had
my own
issues with that. Like, I had one event that I did where, like, they decorated it in a way that looked really nice, but it was really, really impractical for actual tarot card readings. Like, they had, like, these big orbs on it. And I was like, I gotta move one of these.
Yeah, like, I gotta actually lay out some cards. That's what this is about. Yeah, I hear that. But yeah, I've often ended up with those settings where there's a few chairs for people. And now that you say it, I realize, yeah, that does happen all the time. It will be friends, or it will be family, or a couple. And often it's not even like, you know, not a dedicated couples reading, but often it'll be like one member of a couple wants to get it. And the other, often I see this with heterosexual couples, where like the woman will be like, oh, I would like to get a reading. And the male kind of plays coy and is like, oh, well, I don't know, I guess I'll see how yours goes. And 9 times out of 10, after I read for the woman, the man is like, okay, well, I guess I'll get a reading. And there's some interesting, like, heteronormative culture there about what men and women are and aren't allowed to do in public, you know?
Oh, totally. I wind up roping the hetero dude into it frequently, or assumed hetero. I mean, you don't know.
Yeah, for sure. Sexual,
but like, assuming a heteronormativity, because let's face it, most people are hetero. Although neither of us are.
True.
But, you know, I definitely am like, I can do a single reading, I can do a couple reading, and it's kind of like this back and forth. I have had a lot of really nice experiences. The first couple reading I ever did, I wasn't planning to do a couple reading, but they were totally into it, and it was super fun.
Oh, that's
so that
really
was
cool.
Really nice. I have noticed lately more, you know, reading as hetero men getting readings.
I have too. I think it's becoming more acceptable, both as, like, I think there's a big rise of witchy culture the last several years, and that's normalized it a little bit. And I think and hope and pray that we're expanding, like, what masculinity is allowed to look like in our culture, because it's very, very needed.
Yes. Although I do still center marginalized, particularly LGBT communities, in my readings.
Yes.
And that's, I always have some kind of rainbow something visible on my table. So it's pretty clear. I also try to normalize polyam in my readings, because I have a lot of friends and myself who are polyam. And, you know, it's easy when you're doing a love reading to only focus on one partnership. And to be fair, even with polyam friends who are getting readings, they're usually focusing on a particular situation.
Sure.
But it's nice to kind of expand that and be upfront about expanding that.
And it also, I think, would really impact the way you approach your reading. Like, there are cards, I think, that a lot of us agree are, like, the
quote unquote cheating cards. You know what I mean? Where you see this card and you're like, maybe there's someone else. And that appear that type of card appearing in.
What card are you thinking of with that?
I think of both the Seven and the Five of Swords, especially the Seven of Swords.
Huh.
Because to me, I look at both of those cards, especially the Seven of Swords, like it's a sneaky card. And I definitely view it as a, like, gathering up and taking what you can get under cover of night, which in some cases is what an affair looks like, or what, you know, a one night stand looks like in a context where it's not supposed to happen, you know? But some of those cards, like, and I don't know, Seven of Swords still does seem like a sneaky card to me.
But oh, it's totally card, sneaky.
Yeah. But seeing a card suggesting another person, go ahead.
My take on the Seven of Swords recently has been, don't be afraid to be selfish, even if other people are going to be looking at you like you're selfish.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I want to just share, since we're talking Seven of Swords and we talked about money magic earlier, I got Seven of Swords the whole last year in almost every reading I got. The whole last year I was employed at my day job. and it really, right. You immediately get it. It's like, it really was like, I had to lead a double life, and I was very deliberately doing so because I could not afford to lose the day job, you know, when I needed it still. But I truly, like, my head and my heart and everything, I was like just developing this other career. And so I was leading a double life, and it in a way was totally appropriate for me to be doing that, you know? So it was almost like an empowering card. And it's nice because it gave me a perspective of that card that wasn't just like, this person's a sneaky jerk, you know?
For me, I haven't been reading it as such lately, although I don't know if you've experienced this lately. And this is like the longest interview. Oh my God. I'm so sorry for my listeners,
sorry,
who
friends,
like the shorter podcasts, but that's okay. I've been hyping up this interview for so long. I think everyone's going to be okay. Four of Cups is the cheating card to me.
Oh, really? Oh, I can see that. I can certainly see that. Actually, in a deck you hate, Ancestral Path Tarot.
Do I hate that one?
I don't think you hate it, but you've mentioned to me a few times that it's not your favorite. And
that's the
most aggressive language you'll ever use.
I can't remember. I have no image in my head of that.
It draws on different mythological traditions. So like swords is like Japanese warrior culture. I think Shinto culture, and cups is the Arthurian legends.
Is it a Los Garibeo deck?
No, it's not. It's
you're gonna have to show this to me. I have absolutely no recollection of this.
Oh, that's really funny. A couple of times you've mentioned to me like, oh, I don't like that deck, and maybe it's me reading into it like, oh, Susanna doesn't like this, I won't bring it up again.
No. So like the only decks that I really don't vibe with right now, I mean, Oracle decks are really hit or miss for me, mostly miss. I'm going to preface this. I love Ciro Marchetti as a part of the tarot community, but his decks just don't do it for me.
I love Ciro Marchetti. His artwork. I do. I really love,
it's
love
beautiful.
The Gilded Lament. It's gorgeous.
It's so beautiful, but like, I just can't see myself reading seriously with that deck.
Yeah.
But I also read seriously with Vampire Tarot, so maybe we don't listen to me.
I think we both have our own things that make it possible for us to read seriously. For me, I draw a lot on like the kind of personality and the figures of a deck. That's a big cue for me. So having figures that are readable kind of emotionally to me are helpful. And for me, his artwork really has that very evocative, very hyper-realistic feel to it. And I, you know, I don't know if that's as important to you for the way you read, like kind of the catalog of how you view the cards in your head.
Right.
I'm like, and I hesitate to say the words because now I think people overuse it in the same way people overuse the word empath, but I'm a fairly intuitive reader. And this has a lot to do with like the way my grandmother taught me to read cards, which is really, she simply said, like, look at the card and say what you see. And so that's informed a lot of my reading. It doesn't mean I haven't studied. It doesn't mean I don't, you know, like dive into the symbolism and interplay of the different suits and what they represent and the hero's journey and all these things. But also it does mean that I'm at any given moment looking at a card. And it's equally important for me to just like take a step back from all that and look at the picture and say what pops into my head, because often that is like an important connection, you know?
I'm totally there with you. So like, I think that tarot readers who have been doing it for a while, like you and I, it's really important to be able to look at a card. Part of what people are paying us for, right, is not just the fact that we have a pack of cards and are sitting there, but our experience with them. And our long experience with them has taught us that. So like looking at a Celtic cross spread, for most people, that's 10 cards. The way I read it's 11. Mm-hmm. You have these 10 or 11 cards sitting there. You and I can take a look at a Celtic cross and come up with a sentence without going into every card.
Yeah.
Because of years and years of experience and because of our intuition looking at these cards. The only times that I think that someone who describes themselves as primarily intuitive should take a step back from tarot. And I was talking to someone about this who does energy readings. I was doing a reading for her about making her energy and intuitive work a full-time hustle. She moved away from tarot because she realized that she was stepping so far away from the structure of tarot and was better served by oracle cards, which I am so in support of.
Yeah, but that's right for some people.
Right. There's totally a way to blend tarot and intuition. Like I, as much as I say that I rely more heavily on the structure of tarot and the sort of study of what the cards mean, there's a lot of intuition involved, especially mm-hmm. when you're in a multi-card spread.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think that's that doesn't mesh at all. I think that meshes completely. And a lot of that, again, is experience with these cards.
Yes, I think so. And also experience with yourself as a reader. I think that we talked about like people kind of claiming different things of like, I have this ability, I'm a little telepathic, you know, like things like that. And sometimes, you know, perhaps they truly are. And sometimes it's, you know, confirmation bias, you know, it's something that would be lovely for them, or it's just easier for them to see something and they, you know, it makes them think, oh, I must have a gift, you know, and I'm not making a claim of what, you know, people, I'm not sitting here judging everyone who says that to me, but, I think knowing yourself as a reader means being able to critically look at yourself and be like, was that reading super spot on because I'm so intuitive, or was it super spot on because, you know, because the tools were there because of, you know, for me, and the person also was forthcoming, or was the reading a disconnect between me and the person because I told them something I didn't want to hear, which a lot of readers talk about, like, oh, I told them something they didn't want to hear and they didn't like it. Or was it a disconnect because I wasn't willing to hear something from them and I was just so sure of my ability? And I think that ability to be self-critical is very important, especially if you're going to say, I'm an intuitive reader. If you're going to get in touch with your intuition, you have to learn to sort out between your intuition and like what you might like to be true.
I don't know if you've had this experience, but the experience that I've had, and it's one of the things that has kept me from totally disdaining the spiritual woo part of reading. The less sense a reading makes to me, the more it seems to land with the person I'm reading for.
Yeah, I do like, feel that way. And sometimes I'll say something and I'll be very hesitant. I'll be like, I'm going to say this and this person's going to laugh in my face. And instead they're like, oh God, that really resonates. And I'm like, thank goodness.
Yep. Yep, exactly. I'll be like, and I've been getting more comfortable with that. Like, I don't know if this is an energetic thing lately, but lately I felt a lot more comfortable delivering a lot more harsh or maybe even more absolute messages than I normally have been.
I feel that way too. I actually feel, and maybe it's the same for both of us, because I think we both tend to be, people pleasers, and we tend to really monitor people's moods for a variety of reasons we don't need to get into on this in this podcast. But like I,
childhood I think, trauma, what?
Yeah, what? I think for me, reading, especially reading fast paced, like in event settings or on the phone or anything like that, has put me in touch with my ability to kind of make pronouncements. And even saying that feels awful. It feels like, who am I to make a pronouncement, you know? But well, sometimes...
I like to remind people that, like, I may be making this, but your actions can change all of that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And often my pronouncement, I'm not the kind of person in day-to-day life will ever say, like, you need to do this. I tend to think that's very... judgmental and usually inappropriate because, like, I'm not living that person's life, you know what I mean? But often in a tarot reading, to a stranger I know even less, you know, I may say, and I won't use those exact words, but I'll be like, you know, what really is going to help you right now is doing X, Y, and Z, and you really ought not to be focusing here. And giving people the type of very direct advice that I've always been uncomfortable giving others. And I find that often it's not only well received, but very needed. So in a way, it's really like allowed me to own that part of myself, like to be like, oh, no, I'm allowed to have opinions and my wisdom is real sometimes, you know.
All right. So we have been rambling for an hour time. And 7 minutes. Nice. And I normally have a 30 to 45 minute podcast. So we should probably wrap this up. As much as I am enjoying this, and I'm sure everyone listening is enjoying this, because this is exactly the kind of thing that people enjoy listening to. And maybe we'll do another interview at some point. Who knows?
Yeah, I'd love that.
And maybe someone can interview me for my own podcast. That's a crazy
idea. My gosh. Oh, Susanna, I would love to interview you for your own podcast. That would be delightful.
I know. As soon as I release this, everyone's going to be like, yes, it's a great idea. Do it.
Yes.
So I guess, as much as we touched on it, I don't know that we really got on any real specifics that you do. So, like, I mentioned bay leaves and lighting these House Freya candles. Do you have, like, besides your foreign coins, do you have one thing that you would like to share with other people that you do for prosperity or other kinds of magic?
Yeah. I have, it's colloquially known as money plant growing in my garden. I think another name for it that's more common is honesty. And I will either stick that in my wallet. And you can look this up. The reason it's called money plant is because its seed pods look like a change purse, you know, look cool. Like coins. It's really cool. And so it's around this time of year that the seed pods kind of mature and start to look like that. So I will take those seed pods and either, like I said, put them in my wallet, perhaps put them in my tip jar or something like that. The other thing I'll do though is before they mature, I will often like take some of the flowers with some of the seed pods attached because they're like cute little green things in the early spring and maybe place them in my altar. And it's like me having planting a seed for future harvest. I really connect a lot of my money magic to the concept of like planting seeds and harvesting.
I think, and what we were talking about earlier, that's something that anyone listening can take away, whether or not you have a money plant, with whatever plant you have that you associate with that kind of prosperity.
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't have to be money plant. And for me, it was a lucky win. For me, I really try to relate spiritually to my home and my land. And that's like a new novel experience to me because I bought a house a few years ago and I never had land of my own, you know? So for me, the money plant being something that just grows naturally out of the blue where I live is like deeply meaningful to me. And something else may be deeply meaningful to someone else, you know? But like taking anything that symbolizes prosperity to you in a way that you can wrap your head around, especially if it's personal, and doing anything with it, just giving attention to it, I think is meaningful. The other thing that I do frequently is like a letting go type of money magic. I try to ask to be cleansed or try to cleanse myself of any beliefs that are holding me back around money. Because I've learned over the years that that's been the harder process for me is unlearning stuff.
So I'm sitting here nodding at what you're saying because that's such a big deal.
Good. I'm glad you're not sitting there like checking your watch like Rory. I said we had to wrap it up.
No.
That's a biggie for me.
Everyone's been waiting for this interview. So,
yeah, that's huge. I ask for unlearning and I ask for help cleansing. And sometimes it's literally like any type of cleansing meditation, you know, that someone might do. I will just have the intention of saying like, I'm going to let go of what doesn't serve me now. I'm going to put aside any baggage and then just proceed to do the meditation. And I will tell you when I have done that, especially in the context of like having recently done a prosperity spell or something, I will sometimes get done with the meditation and literally have my phone ring that minute with like a high dollar value gig.
And that's really been interesting to me.
I might try to do that now that I have this nursing gig on the horizon, try to let go of some of those things that are holding me back.
Yeah, like hit you up with some crystals that feel good for that. Like I'll put selenite sometimes on my solar plexus, just give myself a big old cleanse.
And I'm big on fluorite, personally.
Oh, fluorite's great. Yeah, I actually sometimes will use the two together. Because I do feel like you and I both take in a lot of information. We're both research-heavy people, so fluorite's helpful because we can get into like too much information or analysis paralysis, and it becomes too much to process. So fluorite's good for that. But I love stuff that just allows me to put it all aside, which would kind of allow me to focus on the important, you know, and selenite does that for me.
All right. So we're going to get into the promotional period of the podcast. So,
oh, excellent.
I'm going to actually start with me because I'd like to end with you. So I'm Antifragile Tarot, as you know. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook as Antifragile Tarot. I'm one word on Instagram, two words on Facebook. I have my Etsy. I'm Antifragile Tarot, one word actually on Etsy, etsy.com/shop/antifragiletarot. If you want to support the podcast, you can hit me up on Patreon. I'm Antifragile Tarot on there as well. $1 a month gets you into the Discord where we all chat. And now that Rory is a patron, she's also there. So you have more people to run your stuff by. Really good group of people there. We all chat stuff. It's a really supportive and nice environment. And even if you can't afford to support me financially, if you can like my stuff on Instagram, share my stuff with your friends, it really means a lot. I may be moving to Anchor soon. I'm looking into that. But for now, Patreon is where to find me. By the time you hear this, I will already be at Liberty Science Center. But the next two events you can find me at in September, I will be at the Liberty Harbor Block Party on September. I need to look this up because I am a trash human. September 14th, and I will be at Arts on the Hudson on September 15th. So if you hit up my Instagram, you will be able to see more information about those. Now, Rory, tell us where we can find your music and your tarot stuff.
Cool. Well, all my music stuff is under my name, Rory Kelly. The big thing you need to know is that Rory is spelled R-O-R-I-E. There's some other Rory Kelly who spells it with a Y. I have not heard his music, but I promise you it's not as good as mine. So make sure you type in R-O-R-I-E-K-E-L-L-Y. And I'm everywhere. I'm on the Facebooks. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. And RoryKelly.com is kind of the best way to get access to whatever, because I have my mailing list on there. I have all my social media channels, and I also have like videos and music you can listen to right away if you just want to, you know, see if my music is for you. I also, I gig nonstop. So if you want to come see me, if you're in the New York City metro area, you can probably see me as soon as you desire to, because I'm always gigging. And I also, if you're not local, I Periscope once a week on Thursdays at noon. That's noon Eastern time, which I think is good for Europe too. I don't know if you have any like European crowd on your Discord or in your listenership, but I think that's like right around dinner time if you're on European time. So that's nice too. And as my tarot self, you can find me at Sassafras Tarot. On all those same channels, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and I have also started a Patreon that's mostly for my music, but it's just kind of for my existence, and it's just under my name, Rory Kelly. So you can find me there as well. Finally, I'd like to share that I will be starting a podcast of my own, and I am committing to do it. It may even be in existence by the time you hear this. I don't know what it will be called yet, but it will be on music, money, and magic, all three things. So I'm going to be promoting it on both channels. So follow me anywhere and you will find out about that.
Maybe something about starting a fire?
Yeah, I might call it the Fire Starters Podcast, but I haven't done my research to make sure no one else is already doing that.
Like,
you know,
because
I don't want to like yank anyone else's name, but if it's not actively used, that's probably what I will call it.
Well, you sound great on this recording, and as long as you keep your podcast episodes relatively short, you will have a listener. I do admit I am not really a podcast listener because most podcasts are like an hour and a half and I'm just not here. So Thank you again for being on this interview. I've been hyping this up for a long time, and I'm really excited that it worked out.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for, I know we both took forever to plan this because we're both such busy people. And I'm really, really glad we got to do it. So thank you for existing.
Thank you. We both wanted to do this right. And I think this was right.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Rory. I love you.
Thank you. I love you too. And thank you, fabulous listening humans.
All right. Have a witchy and or wonderful week. And I will be back on September 1st with another episode. Most likely not another interview, but you might have another one in store for September if I get my podcasting equipment up to date. All right. Thank you so much. Bye.